Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 25, David Shannon. I'm calling David a mega seller, but what really is interesting, he's a mega seller of shoes. David will sell upwards of 20,000 pairs, yes, 20,000 pairs of shoes on Amazon, a little bit on eBay, but mostly Amazon. He talks us through in this segment how being a casino dealer at Pit Boss really helps focus his skills, and he's able to transfer them over to Amazon. But I think it's that focus that he had, and I think that's really a skill that's developed. And then he talks about how he came into Amazon by getting into the DVD vending business, and I just think it's fascinating. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, and tonight's guest is another mega seller, but has a really interesting background that I can't wait to dive into. This is a shoe man. This man knows how to sell shoes. He's on pace to sell 20,000 pairs of shoes this year. So join me in welcoming David Shannon. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Stephen.
Man, oh man, you are really crushing it with shoes, and I'm interested in hearing more about that when we get to it, how you got into it, because I'm familiar with the group that you spoke of in the note. So let's go back. Let's go back a bit. You've been selling for about 5 years, pretty heavy on Amazon, a year and a half full-time, dabbling about 8 years ago, which is a long time ago. I mean, that's a long time to be selling on Amazon. What'd you do prior to that?
Been in the casino business for a number of years, both concurrently with the Amazon business and then before Amazon exclusively. I started as a dealer and then was a pit boss, so standing behind the blackjack tables and watching people try to make a fortune.
So to be a dealer, I mean, you've got to be quick, focused. Is there a skill set that you either have or you don't have, or can it be?
Well, this is a long time ago now. Back in the mid '90s, I guess I was looking for a job that I could do in the off season. I was a minor league baseball umpire for a couple of years, and I came across a dealer school for blackjack and went to school. They placed me in a casino out of there, and I was able to do that in the off season as I pursued the dream of becoming a professional umpire, which lasted a few years before I got out of that. And then went and did the casino thing full time for 11, 12 years. And then the last few years of that, I was doing the Amazon thing, and then moved exclusively onto Amazon and a little bit on eBay last April of last year.
So what's a skill set that a dealer would have? What are the things that they bring to the table?
I don't know that there are many folks out there that couldn't do it given enough practice. It's really just, you have to know math, you have to be able to count, but assuming you have that skill, and most folks do, it's just practicing, getting the cards out of the shoe quickly.
I was hoping to see if there was something that would transition over to the selling business. I was thinking of a risk point of view, but you weren't a player, you were a dealer.
Well,
that's different.
If you want to talk about risk, the reason I was interested in becoming a dealer is because I had started on gambling as a way to try to make a living. I'd learned how to count cards. I've done some sports betting successfully. So I definitely have that risk in me, and that just kind of led to going to the other side of the table and working for the casinos.
So you do have that risk, nerve or what have you. So obviously that can transfer well to this business in a positive and a negative way. Has it reared its ugly side for you yet? Have you made a lot of the bad buys and taken a lot of chances? Or, I mean, now you sound like you've reined it in, but have you come across that?
Well, no matter how big you get, there's always the danger of overbetting your bankroll. That's what we would say in gambling parlance. At buying too much of something that you just think, you know, this can't go wrong. This looks like a great item to buy. If you buy too much of it, regardless of whether you come out on top or not, you probably made a mistake. You don't want to put too many eggs in one basket is what it comes down to. So I struggle with that a little bit. There always seems to be opportunities out there where I really could buy more of something than I know I should. So I do struggle with that from time to time.
I think I do too. And I see a lot of people talk about, you know, hey, I calculated that this is turning 30 items a month and blah, blah, blah. Well, if there's 19 other sellers and they all have the same thing, you're only going to sell two.
Right.
I don't care how great buying them. You're still looking at 200 at two a month. Mm-hmm. It's going to take you. That's a long time. I don't know. And I have some of those sitting in my warehouse,
oh,
as a
too.
Matter of fact.
I do too.
And well, I still sell on eBay, so we can put it out there
right.
And get a little bit of a different audience.
Right.
So you've been selling for a year and a half, and you weren't selling shoes as your main focus. What was your main focus back then?
I got in through the media category, mostly DVDs and Blu-rays, and
okay.
Actually started. I got into that because I bought a video rental machine, very similar to the Redbox machines you now see in a lot of places. And I was trying to trying to make money by renting out DVDs. And I got into that 2 weeks before Redbox hit our market. I'm in the St. Louis area. So not good timing, to be sure. And I tried for a couple years to make that work, and it just didn't. But from that, I had to find a way to sell the used product that was coming out of the machines. And that, after I went to a local store and they were going to offer me, you know, pennies for these items, I went online and sold my first items on Amazon and did that and started buying stuff then exclusively to sell on Amazon, mostly used items when I first started, then got into new items, and it kind of took off from there.
Yeah, I just interviewed Joy Packard. I don't know if you know Joy.
I do.
She brought up I think her interview came out today, and she said something to the effect that one thing will lead you to the next thing. And it, you know, it's kind of a vague thing to say, but it's true. You wouldn't have gotten into Amazon, you're saying, had you not tried the vending machine business with not vending gum or candy, DVDs.
Yes.
You know,
that's 100% true. 100% true.
Yeah, really interesting when you sit back and think about
that.
Really. Kind of takes you there. So what I'm interested in next is, so you did that for a bit and you started moving in. I mean, were you buying anything wholesale then, or where did you get the DVDs for the vending machine?
I got them on eBay. I would buy.
Okay.
For the vending machine? No, I went
for
out.
The vending machine.
I'd go out every Tuesday morning when the new releases went out, and I would buy stuff at Walmart. I looked into getting wholesale accounts, but I could get them cheaper at the Walmarts and the Targets of the world than I could from the places that were going to wholesale them to me, believe it or not. So just because of the number of items I would have to buy, or, you know, I couldn't buy in the thousands. We're talking four or five of each title when I first started.
Right.
So, that's where I got my product.
Huh. And then, so you just scaled up retail arb from there? Is that when you started just buying more from and to sell on Amazon?
Yeah, once I saw, you know, you put a movie in the machine for a few months, and eventually it would have to come out as you replace it with something newer. And I'd sell the used product, and I'd saw how those sales were going on Amazon, and I thought, maybe I'll just try to buy some product to sell on Amazon and not even worry about trying to rent it out of this machine. And that worked very well for, you know, a number of years early on. And then FBA came along, and I thought about putting new product instead of used product directly into FBA. And it just blew me away how well that worked. And I left the rental machine long behind at this point and just looked for new ways to buy new product to sell on Amazon FBA.
Okay, so I'm going to take us to break. And when we come back, I want to talk about a conference you went to. And it was a kind of a pivot point for you, right? Is that, you know, a fair way to say
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to take us to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a real pivot point that David's whole sales situation took off. So we'll be right back. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. All right, before we jump back in, I'm excited about this because, again, another very successful seller is so forthright and helpful. And David's going to break down his business model and show you how he uses sourcers who travel out throughout the United States, six sourcers on the road sourcing for him, his business model, how he processes. I just think it's a great story, and he's just so generous with his time. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with David Shannon tonight, and we're talking about just general FBA. And David is a very successful seller. I call him a mega seller because he is a mega seller, and he had an unbelievable year last year. And I say that, and then he's going to do 1.5 to 2 times that this year. And, you know, yes, he has some staff and he has some help, but it's just impressive when you hear how he's been able to pivot his business. So take us forward. So you were selling, I'll bring everybody up to date, right? You started out selling an FBA a little bit and you grew it through a retail arb. Did you try online arb at that point?
I wasn't, I was buying stuff on eBay and that would lead me to suppliers. So really, it was more like a wholesale game at that point. But most of my leads would start online, and then once I got a relationship, I would move. I wasn't going out into the stores to buy stuff to resell on Amazon initially, although that's kind of what we're doing now. So I kind of maybe took a reverse path that a lot of people are taking.
Well, I don't think that's a bad path. I think that path still exists. There are wholesale people out on eBay selling lots, large lots. And if you can get somebody, especially if you see that they've sold it 3 or 4 times, you got to sit there and say, they have a distribution network of some sort. Maybe I can tap into that. And by reaching out to them and contacting them, that can work very well. That's not a bad idea, because they're paying fees for that stuff. And I always think about that, right? My eBay fees are about 25%. So they're getting it and they're still turning a profit, even though they're going to pay 25% of whatever, your purchase price is. So if you reach out to them and buy it legitimately through eBay, I'm not saying circumvent them at that time, but once you get that independent relationship, that's a different story.
Yes.
And so that gives you opportunity. So that is I still think that's a valid opportunity. All right, so you came along, and then you went to a conference, and the conference was put on by the MMA group. And I know a couple. I know Barrington. I know Lance. I know Ryan. I know John Bullard. I think that's the four that I know. I'm not real familiar with the other guys. So take us through that, what that was and what it's done for you.
This was a very small conference. There were 12 attendees, including myself, and 8 presenters. So we're talking about a great student-to-teacher ratio here. And I went in April of last year, 2014. And I had left my casino job at this point at the start of the month. So I was actively looking for another income stream besides the DVDs and Blu-rays, which you could kind of see the writing on the wall that, those are getting less popular with the advent of streaming, et cetera. So went to this conference in Houston that these guys put on, and every one of them had good ideas and good areas to focus on. But what really hit me was Ken Kelly's shoe sales. Ken Kelly, one of the MMA guys, talked about selling shoes. And he talked about how he would go into shoe stores, outlet stores, buy, use a scanner and just flip it from there onto Amazon. And he put up his numbers, and I couldn't believe the kind of numbers he was showing. And I had to try it. So Ken helped me get approved for shoe selling. It's a restricted category. I bought my first stuff when I got home. We put it on Amazon, and the numbers were, even better than he had claimed. And from there, we've grown it from just me doing this to now I have one employee and 6 buyers and myself all putting this together. And we're doing probably 80% of our sales now is shoes. And it all started with Ken and the MMA group in April of last year.
So again, we're hearing from another very successful seller that, reaching out for help, getting together in a mastermind kind of environment like that, where you're getting almost one-on-one
right.
In that scenario. That's even better than most. But you invested some money. They took their time. They shared some knowledge with you. You took advantage of it. And Chris Green would say that'll separate you from the crowd alone, the fact that you actually took advantage of it, right, and did something with it. But you actually did. And now you have a successful business. I remember seeing a picture you posted way back, and it was your warehouse at that point. There were shoes everywhere in that picture.
The warehouse still looks like that.
Does it really? Yeah. And it was incredible to hear that. So I'm interested now if we can break down some of the process, if you wouldn't mind,
sure.
Right? So you're out. Most of your stuff is coming from RA and OA?
Yes.
Still?
I'd say my buyers are bringing me stuff, RA, from the stores, and that's over 90% of our items are – purchase that way. Some we'll do a little bit of OA, but the RA is pretty much what we're doing mainly right now.
Okay, so you have some independent people who are out there buying based on what you want.
Yep.
Are they physically scanning these items, or do they know in advance that we're looking for Nike Mark II? I don't know,
right.
Making something up. Mark II's purple in size 7.
Well, having done this for quite a while, I mean, they pretty much know what they're looking for when they hit a store. But, I mean, they still bring their scanner, and they're actively scanning along with grabbing stuff that they know works well. So it's a little of both now. But when we started, I didn't give them a list. I went out with each of them and kind of taught them what we were looking for in terms of return and rank, et cetera. And, you know, some of them picked it up quickly. Others, it took, I had to go out with them a second time and even a third. But eventually we got them up to speed, and they all do very well. One of the guys, he works full time for me doing this. I mean, he's an independent contractor, so he's not my employee. But it's his only job, and he's going to make six figures just off the stuff he brings to me. And we split the profit, so whatever he's making, I'm making as well.
Okay, so it's done at a profit level. So you're taking all the fees out, all your costs, your overhead, all that jazz, right? I mean, they're real.
Sure.
And he understands that. And then in the end, you're saying, hey, I'll share the nest with you. Because a lot of people are going to be sitting there saying, hey, what's stopping him from going and doing it alone? Well, number one, it's money usually. Let's make that the big elephant in the room. You got to have a lot of money to buy shoes. Shoes are not cheap.
It is money. But I've told all my buyers, and I try to do this. I don't want to hold them back. If they really want to do this themselves, I want to teach them. And in the meantime, I'm going to use their skill set as it grows for my business. Now, some of these guys aren't interested in doing it for themselves at all, but I know one especially that is. And will she be with me a year from now? Maybe, because of what you mentioned, the money, but maybe not. I mean, she wants to do this on her own eventually, and it works for both of us now. And, she may go out on her own down the road.
So you have six people, one of them full-time, going to earn over six figures. The other ones, what's the least amount of hours that one of them works?
Well, there's one that's kind of on the verge now of maybe dropping out. So you might say that I have five buyers. So let's just focus on those. But
okay. The
other five are the least amount of hours. One guy goes out. His wife actually works in a traveling musical, the Phantom of the Opera. So he goes with her around the country. So he's hitting these different areas. And when he hits a new city, he'll hit several stores in that city. And they're probably there for 2 or 3 weeks. So I would say he's putting in maybe 15 to 20 hours over that 3 week period. So, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours a week. And then my main buyer, I live in the Midwest in Florida. I mean, in St. Louis, he's driving to Florida probably once a month. He's hit Texas. He's out. We got a company van for him, and he's using that. And he's probably working 50 hours a week. If you include all the time he's on the road. I mean,
that's a pretty big spectrum right there. I mean, from 5 hours. But you know what I like about it is you can say to somebody, hey, you know, if you want to earn $1,000 a month, this might be for you. If you want to earn $10,000 a month, this might be for you. It's really what you want to put into it. Isn't that kind of the way life is, right?
Exactly.
I mean, so, you know, that's interesting. And so they're going out there. You're financing purchases,
I
assume?
When I started with the one buyer who now kind of does this full time, we went into this and we each put up the money. We were splitting kind of the buy cost, and we were going to split the profit. I just thought that was fair, and he had money to invest. But I saw as we went on, he just wasn't purchasing stuff when it was his money. I make a lot more money if I'm the one putting up the money, and especially for everybody else who maybe doesn't have money coming in. So I just made this decision that I was going to finance this because I could, and it would be better for me, certainly better for them. But so that's the way, even though it didn't start that way, that's the way it's morphed into me paying for everything.
So you pay for – now they're responsible for their own personal expenses, I assume.
Sure, yeah.
And right, so that's the independent relationship, and that's what you want to keep as an arm's length transaction, right? They incur their own expenses. But, boy, that's just a really neat model where, you know, I guess there's no risk. I think that might be another reason that somebody wouldn't want to leave your situation, because you absorb all the risk in essence. Yeah, they don't make any money, but they're not out anymore.
I do, yeah. I've gone around, you know, with my my payment schedule with a few folks. A lot of people think I'm just paying way too much money. I think I'm probably making about three times as much with this model as I would with another model that had them put up their money. So, you know, at the end of the year, I'm doing a lot better than I think any other model would allow me. So I kind of try to look at that big picture when someone says, well, you're paying these folks way too much money. Well, it may be, but it works for me, so that's what we do.
And I love it. I think it's a smart way. You tried it. You tried another way, and you found the one that's going to give you the most success. So now take me through. So I'm out there buying. How do I get – I'm driving from St. Louis to Texas. How do I get the shoes back to your warehouse, or am I shipping them right from the road?
We have three buyers that are local to the St. Louis area where I live. So they bring the stuff back to my warehouse, and my employee is pretty much handles processing all that. Putting stickers on them, making sure the shoes are clean enough to send out. He does all that. The other three buyers are the other two, because one's looks like she's going to drop out. They process things remotely, and they ship directly to Amazon from where they are. Now, one of those two actually has access to my Amazon account, and she does everything just like I would do it if I had the shoes in front of me. The other guy, I got the Amazon account. He doesn't go into that at all. He just sends me the UPCs for all the stuff he buys. I put that in the inventory lab, and I send him back the box labels for the stuff going to Amazon, and Amazon actually stickers those items for him. So it's a little bit different with each of the buyers, depending on what they want to do, what I want them to do, and where they're located.
Yeah, but I think that's, again, is another way. You're not stuck in one mode. This is the way you must do it. You're trying a couple different things. And I'm sure each person has a different skill set. Maybe that one person's not as computer savvy or what have you.
Sure.
So I think that's great. So what do you – have you had any problems? You know, have you had a buyer that just, you know, just wasn't cutting it? I mean, I guess because they're not making any money, maybe they're, you know, they it's self-fulfilling at that point.
I see that happening with the one who I think is probably leaving. For whatever reason, you know, she doesn't want to put the time in that it's going to require, and she's the only one that sometimes at the end of the two-week period doesn't get a check from me. Everybody else gets a check. So it's what they want to put into it for sure.
I'm out there buying, and what I buy doesn't quite meet the requirement. I guess we pre-agree on, you know, what we're to buy, mm-hmm. but, you know, they still must have a little bit of freedom to be able to take some risks. How do you coach them back through that to say, you know, hey, I understand why you were doing this, but here's why you shouldn't do it in the future?
Sure.
Is that how the conversation goes?
Yeah, and it'll come up from time to time. I'll scan something, and we'll be labeling it in the warehouse, and you'll see, you know, there's no profit in this. So a couple of things could have happened. They could have made a buying mistake. Or two, things could have changed since they purchased it. So you want to figure out which one of those things happened. If the market has changed, and either way, I'm probably going to say, hey, here's what happened with this one. Maybe in the future, this particular item we want to stay away from, or just, you know, want to look at it more closely. But if it's a buying mistake, we'll go through, you know, what their thought process was and what mine is when I see that, and just how we can improve going forward. I'm not worried about that one item that really is awful that they brought in amongst that 100, but I am worried about making sure the process they use going forward is as good as it can be.
Are you you talking to them every day pretty much?
No, probably a couple times a week. I mean, they're dropping off once a week. Sometimes it's just every 2 weeks. And so we'll chat on the phone from time to time, or we'll text. But it's not an everyday thing.
Okay. One of the other things that I see out there a lot is, what do you do? Because some people are buying clearance shoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a risk, because more than likely they've been tried on. The
right.
bottom of the soles are dirty, or the laces aren't done right, and that kind of thing.
Right.
So you know, you really do have to go through and check those things. Or a lot of the stores cut the box tops off,
yep.
right?
Yep.
For those. So what are you doing in that situation? Are you avoiding those? Have you learned over the years? I mean.
Well. I mean, you just hit upon kind of the biggest issue we're having now in terms of I'm struggling with all those things. Number one, they're out in the stores. They can see the items before they buy them. So they need to be the first line of defense in terms of not bringing in stuff that's not up to scale, up to Amazon standards. The stuff that we sell through Amazon, it's a much higher quality of stuff than they're actually selling in the Nike store, because we can leave the stuff on the shelves that we don't want to buy. So I need my buyers to look at the bottoms of the shoes to make sure they're not dirty. When they come in, we've got, you know, baby wipes that we'll wipe the bottom of the shoes down with if there's anything there. And if they're not brand new sparkly, we put them in an eBay pile. And that's kind of the stuff I'm doing on eBay now, is we're getting rid of shoes that are returned that we can't resell, or just stuff that was bought that probably shouldn't have been bought. We don't want to risk our Amazon account. We don't want to risk the customer experience there. So we'll get rid of those through eBay. So that's definitely a big issue. Now, the box top issue is the other one. When we started out, we were buying box top shoes, shoes without box tops, putting them in a poly bag with the box also, and just sell them that way. And we still have a few shoes at Amazon that are that look like that when a customer buys them. But we pretty much made the decision a month or so ago that we're no longer going to send in shoes to Amazon if it doesn't have a box top. We were just getting too many comments back, you know, negative comments. It's a pretty small percentage of the overall sales, but enough that we thought, hey, down the road, Amazon's going to come down on this, and we want to be proactive instead of reactive in terms of what they're probably going to do. So it doesn't.
Have you ever?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, have you ever tried the? I know Mark Levine from Bubblefest has said that he has a shoes box that's smaller than the regular one because it was designed to specifically hold shoes and to put things in. Have you ever used a service like that or found boxes for that and reused?
We have purchased, you know, generic boxes to put shoes in. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, they're generic.
Well, I mean, we're doing that now. Or we've got they're still buying the shoes in the boxes without lids, but we no longer send them in that way. We'll take them and we'll put them in the generic box. We add a little bit to the buy price for the cost of that box in terms of what my buyers have paid. We just pretend it's a little higher. It's another expense. But we are doing that now. Now I'm toying with eliminating that altogether too, because I can see down the road where that might be an issue. I haven't made that decision yet. We're going to try to get through the Christmas season doing it this way. But if we start to get complaints that, hey, this isn't an original Nike box, we're going to just drop that and we're not going to buy off the back walls anymore, because it's too dangerous. And that, like I said, that's the thing I'm probably struggling with right now the most. Where do we want to go? Are we doing the right thing right now, or are we not? I'm not really sure what the answer is.
And do you think that, you know, generally, without touching those box-topped ones or the, you know, the ones I was at a Dick's recently, and man, they had tables full of shoes, but they were all, you know, nothing in a box. There were no boxes anywhere to be seen, you know, and you can buy them cheap. And I know a lot of people did, but again, you know, that's really not, I'm not judging anybody. I don't know that that's really the model, the best model. So without using those, do you think there's enough business out there where you can retail, wholesale, or online, you know, fill that 20,000 pair of shoes a year?
Well, It would cut our numbers drastically in terms of what we're doing out in the stores. Maybe not quite in half, but it might approach that number. So are there other things you can be doing in the same area? Yeah, there are. I'm going to be going to a shoe show in New York here in December. I know they just had one in August I'd hoped to get to, but was unable to. And you've got, you know, 300 people looking to sell you their shoes. And there's a market for that. It's not as big as maybe going to these Nike outlets and grabbing the low-hanging fruit. But if you want to stay ahead of the curve here, because I just see changes coming from the Amazon level, I mean, that's going to be kind of the next thing that I'm working on.
Okay, so you're working on wholesale, and I think that's very sound and very logical. Well, all right, so I think we have a pretty good understanding of what that business is. Do you sell any other types of things related to shoes? Have you gotten into socks or, I guess sneakers? But, I mean, are you selling women's shoes at all too, or is it mostly sneakers?
It's mostly the athletic shoes, not specifically that, but that seems to be what they bring me the most of.
Okay. Well, that's really great. I really appreciate you going a little deeper on that. I know there have been a lot of questions about that. Is there a lot of people are going into the shoes? That seems to be the shiny object today.
Exactly.
And I see a lot of people going in and struggling with this very issue, saying, hey, you know, can I just polybag it? And I just don't think that's a great idea.
Yeah. It works now, but I don't think it's going to work a year from now.
So you built up a really successful business. Were you ever in? Well, I guess you were a pit boss. So, you know, I mean, I guess you were in management. You know, but you know, now you got a lot of pieces to this business moving. Where's that come from? Where's that skill set come from?
Well, kind of the things that have drawn me. I like to ask people when I see if they've got the same kind of interests as I do. I ask them, "Did you ever learn how to solve the Rubik's Cube when you were a kid? Did you ever learn how to beat the Pac-Man arcade game?" These are for folks that are in my age group. Anybody that says yes, I know immediately that we've got a real connection as to how we do things. Gambling is another thing. You ever learn how to count cards? Those are the three skills that I see in people that are most similar to me in this business, that they'll have done one, two, or maybe all three of those things at some point. So, you know, which came first? Who knows? Maybe those things helped, you know, kind of guide the decisions I'm making now, or maybe that was in me before then.
Would you say that your biggest strength is that your follow through or your focused, intentional? I don't know what word to use. What do you think is your biggest strength?
That's a tough question for me to answer, and I saw that on your list, and I'm like, oh boy, that's just like a job interview, you know. I really yeah. hate it when that
All
question
right.
comes
David,
up.
David, I want to dig deeper about you, buddy. Come right. on now. Like, give us some more.
But I think not giving up, you know, being real determined in what you want to do, and then think about how you're going to solve whatever problems in front of you. Lots of people will see a problem and they'll think they can't do it and they'll leave it alone. I learned from countless hours at the casino where with not a lot to do but think, that if you just think about a problem long enough, the solution's going to present itself. And you just don't give up. Just keep going back to it in your head, and you'll get ahead just by doing that.
All right, David, tell us why we shouldn't hire you. What's your biggest weakness as an entrepreneur?
Oh, my gosh. I think we struck on one earlier, and that was going too deep on items. You know, it's really easy to do because there's so much stuff out there, especially in wholesale, which I'm trying to do more of. We just had one thing come along, too, actually, in the last 10 days where I just really could have gone deeper and wanted to. But had I done the first one all out, I might not have had the funds for the second one too. So I'd say that's something I struggle with.
Yeah, I think most of us do, because, you know, at least in my experiences, you know, hey, that deal was just had this conversation with a friend in my warehouse this morning. He's like, Steve, you really ought to take a month off from buying. And I'm like, you know, yeah you're right. But there was this guy, he gave me a great deal. As a matter of fact, it was on shoes. I got 80% off retail, 80%.
Yeah.
I mean,
how could you say no?
Right. We're talking Merrill's and we're talking,
sure.
you know, Keens. I bought them all.
Of course.
I mean, that's what you do, right?
That's what I do.
Yeah, I understand. So what are you struggling with, David? I think we kind of touched on a little bit, was we're talking about, you know, kind of finding that kind of sweet spot. You know, you can't go the real, real low hanging fruit, because I think that line is moving above it. I kind of, you know, there seems to be a line moving above it, or it's an eBay thing, right? And that's not fun for volume. So what else are you struggling with? Or is that pretty much where you're at?
I mean, that's the main thing on my mind now, is what am I going to do about this box top issue, et cetera? Should I just, you know, put out the edict that we just don't buy those anymore? And like I said, the decision we have at the moment is to put them in the nice generic boxes. They're pretty. They're better than the generic boxes that Amazon has. I mean, they're white and they're kind of shiny. And I haven't had any bad feedback yet. And it's been, I've been doing it for, I know, a month or a month and a half. So I'm hopeful that takes us through the Christmas season without any struggles. And from that point, we'll see, are we going to continue that or just chop that off and just only buy stuff with the box tops?
All right. Well, here's kind of a cool thing, right? So you and I both are going to be at CES this coming week.
Right.
This week, actually, this week coming, right?
Yep,
later
it.
On this week.
Yeah.
This interview will not air until after CES.
Okay.
So it will not. So I'm interested to know, what do you hope to get from CES? Right. We're going to be in there in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you hoping to do? What are you hoping to get? What would you give me two or three things that you would put a little check mark next to? Got it done. Give us a couple.
Well, getting reacquainted with folks that you've met at other similar events is probably the biggest thing. Networking. It's just so important. And in the business world or in my casino life, I just hated to network. I didn't do that kind of stuff well. For some reason, in this line of work with people doing the same thing and loving what they do like I do, I love networking at events like this. And that's why I go talk to folks that, you see a couple times a year, but you immediately have a connection with, you immediately can ask questions of, and they of you. It's just the perfect environment to kind of feed the stuff that really keeps me going. So that's the reason I go to this event. It's not to learn how to sell overseas better or this or that, although I'll definitely pick up, you know, some ideas and maybe things that will work with my business in the future. But it's about connecting and reconnecting with the people that are there.
You know, Greg Murphy's a mega bookseller, through $3.5 million this year. And he told me one time, he said, you know, Steve, he said, I have a staff. And he said, it's kind of lonely, though, being the only one who can talk at this level. I can't talk at the same level with my staff or even my family as I can at an event like this. And so I think there's some real validity what you're saying. You could be saying, hey, I'm getting ready to do this. And somebody's going to say, I did it. Here's how I did it. Here's what worked. Here's what didn't work. And you can bounce that off. And I think there's some real validity there. So I'm going to be interested. I'm going to be interested to hear how it went by the end of the week. So I want to see how much networking you're doing. I'm going to watch you. I'm going to keep track of you. So what's the best advice you got? And who'd you get it from?
Just in my life in general.
Yeah.
I think when I started my adult life and my working life, I was too concerned about what other people thought about what I was doing. I kind of got on a path to be a teacher for a little bit, and I like teaching things, but I don't think I would have liked the school setting so much. And I was doing that because of parental influences, not that they were forcing me into one line of work or anything. Finally, one of my aunts one day said, you know, I had been doing a little bit of the casino work, but kind of playing it off like it, you know, wasn't a great job. People maybe looked down on it. And she said, you know what, if the paychecks aren't bouncing, it's a good place to be. And that right there, just kind of, I was able to let everything go and let everything work itself out and not be concerned about what the folks around me may or may not have been thinking. It was just like a weight off my shoulders. So I thank her for that advice, even though she really probably didn't even know she was given advice at that point.
It's almost kind of like an acknowledgement or, you know, I understand what you're saying. You know, it's hard in this business to explain what you do because people are like, either that's really easy, really cool, or they have no, their eyes glaze over and they're like, oh my God, he's talking about it again, right?
Right.
So are you using any internet tools that, you know, it doesn't sound like you're doing a lot of online stuff, but you're clearly using the scanners and stuff out there, right? And any other tools that you think that would be useful for our listeners?
Well, the biggest help to me has been Inventory Lab, which can be used as a scanning tool, but mostly it's great because it allows me to sell the same item from different buyers at different prices and still get them paid correctly. That was something I picked up from somebody at the last CES. I said, hey, I've got this problem. They said, hey, go use Inventory Lab. It took a while to get the shoes that we had and everything else kind of listed correctly in Inventory Lab because we had a whole bunch of stuff that was at Amazon already. But once I took the time and really did that, boom, it just made everything so much easier. And I can't believe I ever tried to do it without a product like this.
So take me through that because you know, I'm an accountant by trade. Yeah. So for me, this stuff fascinates me. So you have a SKU and it's the same SKU.
Right.
I'm buying Nikes for you and Jim over here is buying Nikes, the exact same ones. But I'm buying them at 30 and he's smarter than I am. He's getting them at 28.
Right.
And so, you know, you have an overhead charge and you have all the rest of that jazz and fees and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're able to give them unique SKUs, but they're the same SKUs.
Now,
so how do you
use it exactly the same? But when we input this into the Amazon system, we use Inventory Lab to load it and to sticker the item. And while we're doing that, we put the supplier of the item and we put the buy cost of the item. And then they separate it at their level. And when I run reports, I can separate those reports by the supplier and get everybody paid that way.
So supplier, I mean, are you? Let's just use Walmart. You can't buy Nikes at Walmart, but let's just say that was Walmart. So is it Walmart-Steve and Walmart-Jim?
Well, it could be, yeah. When I use supplier, I strictly use it. Who's the buyer? Supplier and buyer mean the same thing to me.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Yeah. Wow. So that's really smart thinking. So you immediately – well – for a lot of reasons, you immediately know what somebody's bringing you very quickly.
Oh, yes.
Wow. And you can do it by date. I'm familiar. I've used Inventory Lab for a little bit, and I'm familiar with it. So that's the way you're using. Oh, that's genius.
Yeah.
Absolutely genius.
Game changer.
So there's a big tip. Okay. He's let out a big tip out of the bag, right?
Yeah. If you're going to different buyers, you need Inventory Lab or something that does the same thing that Inventory Lab does. And I don't know another product like it at the moment.
Right, and you could keep the receipts by that person by that date, so if you ever had to go back to them, so you could still, instead of putting Walmart in, because really, what frankly do you care that you bought it from Walmart?
Yeah.
Who really cares?
Doesn't matter.
You really care that, because you didn't buy it, Steve bought it, and you care that Steve brought it in those dates. That's really smart, really smart. I think that's a big tip, and I think some people are going to be like a light bulb going off saying, huh, I have not thought about that. All right, so what other podcasts or books that you're listening to or have used that have helped you in your business?
Podcasts or books. Most of the time when I'm reading a book, it seems like it has to do with gambling, and it just it's, and I don't really gamble anymore, although I used to, like I said, do it quite a bit and even try to make a living at it. But it's just kind of that getting your brain thinking in one way or another. It just helps feed the kind of thinking I'm trying to do here also. And in terms of online content from other people, I'm getting pretty big into Facebook is just an area that I kind of hang out in with some of the different groups, answering questions or asking some and learning a lot that way. But I'm not going to a lot of different podcasts, although maybe I should. You know, we'll put yours on the list for sure.
No, I appreciate that. You know, hopefully there's something that would resonate with you. I've had some amazing interviews like yourself. I mean, just things that you sit back and say, huh, I never thought about it that way. I love doing it because I learn something every single time I talk to somebody. I learn so much, and I think to myself, man, I don't know anything. These guys are geniuses. So I really appreciate that. Okay, so we're at the end of the podcast, and one of the goals of this podcast is to help somebody move forward. So they're selling $10,000 or $20,000 a month, and in my line, my thinking, that's really not enough to earn a full-time living.
Right.
I always say it's easy to sell 100 items a day on Amazon. Try to do it on eBay. Good luck. Mm. I mean, that's a hard work, right?
Yeah.
So you've really got to – but a lot of people hit that wall, and they just can't get past it. So I'm looking for a skill set, a trick, a tip, something that people can use to move their business forward.
Well, the moment that I had where I kind of knew I was ready to leave my other job behind, it was just a financial thing in terms of, you know, I'm going to make more only doing this than I would doing the casino job and this. So if you ever get to that point, well, you're ready. And if you're not at that point, well, then get to that point, but don't give up the 9-to-5 job yet. I know everybody wants to be doing this all full time and leave their other job behind. And if you do that at the wrong time, I mean, I spent 3 years doing both of these things concurrently until I really had this built up big enough. And I think if I'd have done it earlier, it would have been a mistake. So I know it's sexy to say, boy, I'm just doing this full time, but it's maybe not always the right decision unless you can make more money at this than you can at this and the other thing.
That's great advice. I think it's absolutely smart advice. You build that pipeline, right? And you fill the pipeline, and you just keep filling it and filling it and filling it, and you'll eventually get to a scale, but you have to have it full. And if you don't, you'll be in trouble very, very quickly.
Yes.
I think that's great advice. Hey, David, how can our listeners get in touch with you to find out more about you or maybe ask a question or two?
Well, you know, I don't have an online presence myself except for Facebook. I don't really sell my services, but I'm always happy to talk to folks. If somebody really wants to get a hold of me, they can probably do that through you, and I'd be happy to talk with them. Anybody that's going to CES, this is going to air after CES, so I guess that's out. But I'll talk to you at CES and everybody else. Boy, I sure hope you found me while you were there.
I'll introduce you to a few people because I'm going to be watching how many people you network. I'm going to hold you to
there
that standard. I'll be like, hey, are you networking? David, I really appreciate you taking the time to come with us tonight. You gave us great information, man. Best of luck
to you. Thanks, Stephen. I sure had fun.
You have a good night.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.